Good morning, everyone. I'm Brendan Sharkey. I'm the chairman of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, and this is our Local Government of the Future subcommittee meeting for April 26th, 2022. So this is a kind of I don't know about how you guys all feel, but this is a difficult time. this is a busy time right now because of session being in its last throes, if you will, for this. And so I know I'm kind of pulled in a bunch of different directions as we speak. I'm sure Brian is and others are. This particular subcommittee meeting would be the first at which we would discuss a couple of the concepts that we had assigned to the subcommittee on sua sponte, as we say in the legal trade, not assigned to us by the legislature or by others, but in fact, ones that we have identified for ourselves. So I'm anticipating this will be a relatively, it may be a relatively brief meeting just to kind of flesh out first steps toward how we would go about proceeding on this front, with the recognition that I don't think a lot of us can really get our heads around doing too much until after session's over. We've done the call to order. I don't know if anyone had any thoughts on the notes from the previous subcommittee meetings that, or the draft ACIR minutes that Bruce disseminated. We don't typically do a formal vote on those at these particular meetings, but I don't know if anybody had any comments about those. We reserve an item on our agenda for that purpose. Seeing none. Let me just a couple of quick updates before we get into the topics under item three. The House did pass the legislation, the bill number, I'm forgetting, but the legislation that included the extension of remote meeting authorization to cities and towns. Brian, what was the number of that bill? I always forget.
It was 5269.
Okay, yeah. That passed last Wednesday, as I recall, out of the House. It's now pending in the Senate. There was some heartburn on the part of members of the Republican Party, not so much on the merits of the bill itself, but on questions about whether we are authorizing local officials to remain hidden from public view and shielded from public view, as opposed to what would be required for in-person meetings. That seemed to be the crux of the opposition throughout the committee process as well. And I know that there was also a little bit of heartburn over the fact that if they did not authorize or reauthorize that those provisions for cities and towns before the end of April, cities and towns would not be authorized to actually hold remote meetings at all. And at some point earlier this month, I did call Vin Candelora just to give him a heads up that was in fact going to happen if there was opposition. And because my friends on the other side of the aisle from my side would probably be tagged with the chaos that would ensue if they were perceived as the ones preventing this from going forward. So I called the House Minority Leader to kind of give him a heads up about this, which he gratefully accepted. And as a result, I think he cleared the way for, not necessarily just on my, because of what I did, but I think he, with that understanding, he cleared the way for getting the bill out of the House so that that did not befall them, or the blame did not fall on the Republicans in particular. So so that's good news. That's proceeding. I don't know, Brian, if you had anything more, or Rick or anyone else had any other thoughts about that.
Before, yeah, just
that's a product of the subcommittee.
Yeah, I was going to say the they did not have the 2/3 necessary to do an immediate transmittal to the Senate. So that slowed it down for a couple days. And for them really to do it this week, the Senate would have to suspend its rules for an immediate transmittal to the governor to get it done by the 30th, which is this Saturday. So I'd anticipate there's going to be a lag. I think it's going to pass, but there may be a lag between, you know, if they don't suspend the rules, then it's got to go through the normal process of, you know, going to LCO, OLR, and then Secretary of State's office, and then to the governor. So basically what I've told people is just plan on in-person meetings for the, you know, first couple weeks of May, and then hopefully everything will resolve itself before then. I also said, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, but they could still hold a hybrid meeting. They just have to have an in-person component. They just would not be able to do remote only. And I think some people just want to get some of these committees to hold an in-person and then, you know, go back to what we've been operating under since last July.
Right. Do you think that the Senate leadership knows about those needs?
We've been making those calls and inquiries, and I know Cost has as well. The governor's office said as soon as it hits his desk, he's going to sign it. So there's no problem there. We've been making those overtures. But, you know, I don't want to go too far astray here, but you got that speaker that you know all too well. The Senate isn't doing any House bills yet, and the House isn't doing any Senate bills yet. So that's going to delay things for a few days.
As I tell my class every spring, let's ban the Senate. Let's just let the House do everything. We got this. We don't really need the Senate for reasons just like this.
It's funny. So, you get the proverbial, we'll do it. We can do like 50 bills in, you know, one shot. And I'm like, well, okay, hopefully you'll do this one before then.
Right. Okay. So with thanks, Brian. So with that update, let's just talk about let's get on to item 3 here, which is the discussion of how we might want to begin putting together these particular studies that we've identified, the municipal data collection, and then also maximizing federal funding. Feel free to jump in, folks, as we go. But I know that one of the things, and I know John is not able to join us. John Filczek is not able to join us this morning. And he is a font of wisdom on some of the things that we might want to include here. But fortunately, we have the rest of the crew already here, Lyle and Francis and everyone else. But I know that with regard to maximizing federal funding, we had talked about trying to reach out to particularly county governments in other states to learn and understand how they go about managing the process for acquiring information about federal resources that are available, and then putting together the grants and other applications that are necessary to make that happen. How much staff? I think that they need, what's their success level? How do they kind of get their heads around that? That was one thing that we we had talked about with that. The second, I think, was also to perhaps, as part of that, revisit the discussion of whether we should be recommending anyway some consolidation of regional service delivery functions so that geographically we are more in sync on everything from emergency services, homeland security, to health districts, to you know, going down the list of all the various and sundry things that we do on a regional basis but don't necessarily have a coordinated way of doing that. So those were the two thoughts about the federal funding thing. And then on the municipal data collection, if I'm remembering our conversations, we were talking about assembling what data we already collect and working with OPM to understand what data we already collect from municipalities and then, you know, get an inventory of what works, what is useful, what isn't. So those are my two recollections of where we were going with this. And I'd open it up to anyone else on this to see, you know, how we, A, I got it right, but B, how we proceed. Yes. Lyle, yeah.
Yes, thank you. I think the maximizing federal financial participation starts at a state framework level. In other words, you look at state programs, and the governor's office with the legislature looks at the array of federal programs and maximizes them. So in the Midwest, they had a very elaborate human service program. And the first question at every meeting was, how do we maximize federal financial participation? So it becomes a framework when you look at all these expenses. How do we maximize federal funding of the standard programs we do? And that needs to be driven through OPM, the governor's office, and the legislature. So you start with, you know, how do we start, you know, how do we maximize federal financial participation? So that's one. The second aspect is how do agencies within that framework do that? So, you know, social services or mental health or, you know, whatever it is, how do they actually do that in terms of maximizing the federal financial participation through grant writing, competitive programs, non-competitive programs, and so on. So there's two levels. And then you get to the level of local government where they have the capacity to reach out to make sure they maximize federal financial participation, like go for the federal money. So that's my first point. So I think the first one, I think there may be information from the National Council of State Legislatures, the National Governor's Office. I don't know if... you know, Brian, whether CCM is into this, but that whole framework of how do you get the state to maximize federal participation in all of our standard programs, then how do you pass that through to the state agencies, and then finally, how do we get that message out to local government? But it starts there. Now, the other part, and I think Francis may want to offer a comment here, there's a structural problem, which is we don't bring very much money in, and we send a lot of money out of the feds. That's a different kind of animal, I would say, which is we, as a defense contracting state, you know, we pull in some federal money, but we really don't, you know, pull in as much as we might. Those are the three steps I would suggest, either working with the New England Policy Center, the National Governors Association, National Council of State Legislatures, on states that have frameworks, how do you actually maximize FFP in my previous life? How you get that message to the state agencies so they're doing it, and then how do we get the local aspect? So let me tell a story out of school here so I can turn off the recording. But when I first moved here, President George W. Bush was about to cut a program for super case management, which is for multi-problem families. And they had a special program in HHS to deal with families that had, you know, three, four, five, six problems with multiple case managers and so on. And George W. Bush put a proposal to eliminate this in front of Congress. And I asked that the then social services folks here, you know, what are you going to do about, you know, making sure we don't get this program cut? And they said, we never applied. So that's the wrong answer. So, but, and that was hundreds of millions of dollars, I might think. So that's three levels, you know, getting the federal framework, and the governor's office, OPM and others, getting in the state agencies and then getting it into towns and regions. And I think there's a lot there that we could do to maximize FFP. But it's a long haul, takes a lot of work. You know, OPM needs to be on it. Towns need to be on it. The governor's office needs to be on it. And so that's my suggested framework, in addition to your points.
Yeah. I'd also mention a little bit of ancient history for me, too. When I was in college, actually, in Washington, for 2 years, I worked for the governor's office in D.C. And at the time, Bill Ratchford, Congressman Bill Ratchford, had just won a seat on the Appropriations Committee. And one of my assignments in as an intern for the governor's office in D.C. was to meet with state agencies and try to understand how different parts of the federal budget might benefit programs and services that we provide here locally.
Exactly.
And apply for it and feed that information to Bill Ratchford. So that is, he's doing markups on appropriations bills. Now, exactly. I mean, fast forward 30 some odd years, and here we are. And we have not just a member of the Appropriations Committee, but the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in Washington. And I think coordinating with the governor's D.C. office is also exactly. a potential resource there that we may want to access. That's just my little two cents.
Absolutely.
Francis, I'm sorry. You had your hand up. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Brendan and Bile. So I would concur with both of you. I do think it's important that we understand the balance of payments issue potentially as three subcomponents. One is how much we send to DC in taxes. A second one is how much we get back in formula and discretionary funding to our government agencies in Connecticut. And the third is how much actually goes to, say, private sector contractors in the states, such as defense contractors. So those are three separate issues. What I do think is we have a unique opportunity here to tease this apart, because the coronavirus relief money did not involve changes to the tax code. And it also did not really involve, I should say that the tax code is taken off the table here, not really big, large changes there. So if you look at fiscal year 2020, there already is a difference in the amount of relief money Connecticut got on a per capita basis. So you separate out one potentially confounding factor. So I think we're in an ideal moment to look at this and understand, for instance, why did New York and Massachusetts get $1,000 more per capita in coronavirus relief money than Connecticut did?
Could I just add one thing to what Francis just said? And I apologize, I'm going to have to leave about 11. The other thing I forgot to mention is, and we have a federal lobbyist, but when I was in the Midwest, I had a county lobbyist that did nothing but look for federal money. And that person was bringing in $20 to $40 million a year for 500,000 people. So that's another element of this. You know, you've got to go look for the money in all the committees and all that. And I don't have a mechanism for doing that in Prague. I don't have a $100,000 contract with a federal lobbyist to do that right now. So there's a lot of dimensions to this that I think we could explore, and Francis has listed them, and we could pull those off. And I see Bruce diligently working his quill pen there. But I think there's some, a good framework in here. But, sort of governor's office, legislature, departments, local governments. I think the balance of payments thing is a lot more complicated and extremely political, as you might imagine. But just pulling down those federal dollars and having the capacity at the state government agency and local levels to go after the money. So some of us just go get it when you're, as you well know, Brendan, when a bill is being drafted, when there's somebody from a state or a county whispering in your ear in Washington, that makes a big difference. And we have a guy. So I think we can bump it up.
Right. So would you guys recommend that on that particular topic on maximizing federal funds, that a next step would be for us to sit down starting with Martin, but sit down with the governor's office and with folks at OPM about designing this concept a bit and fleshing this out a little bit more. Francis, what do you think about that? Would that be a logical next step following Lyle?
I think it's a logical next step. I would say that we're seeing a lot of activity on this front because the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is dangling an unprecedented amount of discretionary funds in front of the states, counties, and local governments. And so people are being reactive and they want to, you know, go after those prizes. But, you know, we shouldn't make this tied only to IIJA. It needs to be a standing activity because there are so many federal programs, formula and discretionary, we could take advantage of. And these nascent grant writing, coordination, management operations really need to focus on the breadth of federal programs and not solely on IIJA.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But just a quickie, I think that's a good idea, Brendan. But just as an example, I mean, health and human services are amazing gold mines for federal money. You need to maximize. And they're often hidden in all kinds of pockets. They're not simple discretionary programs or allocations. But I think Francis makes sense. But I think it makes sense to sit down with OPM folks and get a basic framework and then see where we go from there. But I think it's well worth doing, and it's certainly not related to infrastructure only.
Right, right. Okay, well, why don't I see if, and maybe with Bruce's help, I can, you know, coordinate, reach out to Martin, but also reach out to the, whether through Martin or directly to the governor's office and see if we can schedule something for after session, you know, maybe, you know, second week in May or something. To do that. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. And then with regard to the, municipal data collection, I mean, that's obviously also an OPM thing, but I don't know if CCM has a guidepost for that as already in place. Do you guys have, you know, any kind of summary of the various and sundry data that gets collected at the local level and submitted, and then
I was going to say we have some, but we do.
Have you ever
but we do rely on OPM actually from much of our the dollars that we receive. So we're actually looking at, you know, collecting data in making it more encompassing than what we already do. But we do have some labor statistics, salaries, and that kind of thing. But as far as budgetary items, okay. less robust.
Hey, Brendan, can I add to what Brian just said?
Sure, Rick, yeah.
When we talk about more data from municipalities, can someone elaborate on exactly what we mean? Is it consistent budget numbers through use of a consistent chart of accounts? Is it, you know, other measures of well-being in each municipality? What are we specifically talking about?
Francis, yeah, I can help address that, if that's okay.
Yeah, Francis, go ahead, sure.
So OPM collects a variety of data. They've been collecting for about 40 years, at least, municipal fiscal indicators, like every municipality, which are published in an electronic volume, but it's not clear how they're used beyond that. Municipalities also produce their CAFRs, their audits, which are collected. They submit parcel data to OPM. They share vital records with the state. They submit every real estate sale is submitted to OPM. OPM collects a lot of data from municipalities. And the question here is, what is it that is being collected? How is it being used? Could it be used in better ways? Is there data that's not being collected that should be collected? And so on and so forth. Just first of all, to get an overview of what actually is being collected by all of the different sub-offices.
That's helpful. Just a thought. Brian talked about this, and I think, you know, our research department at CCM has tried to work pretty hard in recent years to help municipalities have more information to make better informed decisions. And Brian, you stop me if you see it differently, but I think one of the, you know, recently we engaged REMI to help us understand better some longer term aspects and broader consideration of the impact of different decisions related to taxation and so forth. But, you know, the hope, I think, ultimately would be not only to collect information from municipalities, because we do need that to help them consider that data in more informed decision making, but also to think about the decisions they make over and the impact it has over the long term and the impact it has across multiple cities and towns or statewide. Is that what we're trying to do with this?
That would be one.
Yes, I think so. Francis, what?
Yes, you, I would have. That would be one use of the data to help towns benchmark, to help them understand their trajectory, to understand economies and efficiencies. And there's just so much data that, you know, we've looked at these municipal fiscal indicators at WestCog. We digitized 40 years of data, and they tell some fascinating stories about property taxes that have never been reported on and could be really interesting for local and state policymakers. And we think that there are potentially a lot more stories in the data that we are already collecting.
Can I, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I can also...
Steve, sure.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. That in a lot of the work I do with municipalities, comparative data would be enormously beneficial in collective bargaining, in terms of how collective bargaining agreements are structured, what their impact is on budgets, and how other municipalities are dealing with it. So that could be helpful while you're negotiating. It could be helpful in mediation and arbitration. When I'm doing charter revisions, CCM has provided some assistance to the municipalities I work with, but they don't have all the data on the different structures of different governments. Recently came across an issue of trying to figure out how many treasurers were equivalent to the Hartford treasurer. And we eventually got there, but you had to do some data mining, and there should be really easily attainable data for just a variety of functions in terms from structure to collective bargaining to just the normal budgeting issues. So I just wanted to raise those a few items.
Right. Yes, Margaret.
I think Francis is right. I think we have so much data, and it's perfectly clean. You know, it's perfect data. It's not all 169 different versions. And I think we don't have to waste too much time with that and just work with what we've got. And you're going to see an awful lot of, especially now that he can now go through it over the years, this could be tremendously time-saving. And I can see where we could really prove that, yeah, it's so darn expensive to live in Connecticut. Of course, our income is higher, you know, kind of thing. So which came first? But I think Francis is right.
Right. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So what would be a next step on that front as well? Obviously, that's another. You know, in terms of accumulating and understanding the breadth of data that is collected, is a task unto itself, just cataloging what it is that we collect. You know, obviously that's an OPM treasure trove, if you will, and maybe that's a separate conversation with them to kind of, and maybe that's a separate meeting to kind of, see if they can provide us with that comprehensive list.
Lyle? Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I have to leave. So I will leave you in control of the turning off the meeting. I will not turn off the meeting accidentally. And I volunteer to help on the FFP discussion. So otherwise, I have to run and I apologize.
No worries. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Thanks a lot. Francis?
Yes. Several years ago, the Connecticut Department of Transportation began to examine the data they collect because they had all sorts of data, valuable data, in different databases at different people's desktops, right? And to try to bring it into one cohesive structure. I think it was a very useful exercise, and it's, you know, resulting in a lot more data being surfaced, exposed, and being used. I don't want to downplay how labor-intensive inventorying the data at a state agency like OPM could be. It could be a large project. What I would suggest is that we can also approach it from the other side and interrogate municipalities about what they are sending to OPM or other state agencies. So we may be able to approach it from two angles.
Right. Margaret?
No, I wasn't. I didn't have anything more to say.
Oh.
I just
think I'm sorry.
I think we have it. You know, we really
do. I thought
you
had your hand raised. Okay. No. Okay. So we've got a couple tasks there, most of which involves OPM. So why don't I reach out again? It would be after May 4th, obviously, but maybe we can plant the seed now for meetings to take place after the session's over, sometime around mid-May, and begin that conversation and discussion on both of those topics. Bruce, maybe you and I can kind of coordinate with Martin on how best to do that, if that makes sense to you. Okay, thanks all. And then I'm gonna take a little bit of liberty as the chair on item four. We were going to talk about, you know, the property tax reform and the DRS tax incident report, but to be honest with you, I think it's better to have that conversation after session's over, because I have a feeling that there may be some other requests made of ACIR along this front, whether mandated by legislation or suggested in the context of discussions taking place, and I may want to hold that off until we kind of know a little bit more of the lay of the land from this legislative session. And then, you know, folks are going to be going off onto campaign mode right after session is over. But I think in the aftermath and the debris that's left after session's over, and after we start sifting that stuff out, we may find that there are some specific things that we're going to be asked to do. Margaret,
I was just going to say, Francis Westcog came up with some very interesting proposals. I was wondering how far they've gotten in the legislature.
Margaret, could you elaborate which proposals you're referring to?
Tax sharing kind of thing.
The
one where if you can't provide the housing in your own town, you'll pay somebody else kind of thing.
Yeah, Margaret, I would. Yes, that's been misreported in the press. We don't actually have any legislative proposals. There are concepts in a draft, which is actually no longer public because the public comment period has ended. You know, the goal here is probably in line with what ACIR is interested.
Thank you.
Hey, Brendan, what you described as the next step on this makes good sense in waiting until the end of the session. I just want to say one thing real quick. I found the new tax.
There may be some language we need to address in our plan. There is no get out of jail payment option that we were intending to propose in our plan.
Okay.
Brendan, I do agree with you.
Yeah, thanks, Francis.
I was going to say, I do agree with you on postponing any action on the property tax issue, but just before I forget, I know there have been some complaints that the tax incidence report was not comprehensive enough. I think one thing that was left out, if I'm not mistaken, too, was the impact of tax penalties, which we may want to look at in the future.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, Brendan, I was just going to say something sort of similar.
Okay, thanks, Francis. Yeah. Rick?
Not to prolong this, but I found the newest tax incidence study kind of disappointing. Maybe I'm biased myself in terms of my concern about our over-reliance on the property tax, but it seemed like this latest tax incidence study downplayed the I'm sure it reported accurately on proportions and so forth, but in the interpretation and the text, it seemed to downplay what our over-reliance on the property tax does to us in Connecticut. Just my two cents.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I tend to agree with you on that. I know that Mark Boughton has been very interested in talking to us more about the study and about the role we can perhaps play in helping DRS, given that this is not, it doesn't fall squarely into DRS's purview, but certainly it, you know, property tax reform is within his portfolio. And I think he's very interested in having that conversation with us, and seeing how we might be able to help DRS with the property tax side of what they're doing at the state level. So again, it's a post-session thing, but afterwards I intend to reach back out to Mark and see where we are with that and see if he's interested in joining us.
Thank you.
All right, good. Are there any other thoughts? I don't mean to rush us off, but I think we covered the main points in terms of what our next step should be on the direction we're taking. Any other comments or thoughts before we adjourn and gird our loins for the last 10 days of session? Yes, Margaret.
Just so that I have it clear, it's possible that something will happen to continue meetings, meetings, not in-person meetings. So in other words, they've extended it, or they may be going to extend it till when?
It would be if it's passed, there would be no sunset date, so it would be in perpetuity.
Ah, okay, thank you. That's if it passes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So add that to your list of things you're pushing for between now and the end of session, in whatever world you're working in terms of getting legislative action before May 4th. Add that to your list.
Good luck. Yeah.
So, all right, folks. Thank you very much for joining us, and appreciate the insight. And we'll pick this up and move it so that by the time we get to our next meeting and the next meeting of the subcommittee, we'll have some tangibles to report. All right. Great. Well, thank you all, and good luck for the end of the session.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Brendan.
Thank you.